Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one, because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to episode 2 of Beer with Geeks, the podcast where we reminisce about our geeky childhoods with our ungeeky beer. I'm Tim.
And I'm Frank.
And today we will be discussing our favorite old school black and white movie.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Is that
film noir was all the rage.
That's the only choice.
From behind the black curtain there came
color.
No.
Ruined everything. This newfangled Technicolor.
It was the that was
Panavision.
Quite possibly was the best intro to The Wizard of Oz I've ever heard.
Thank you. Yeah. That's
behind the black curtain game.
Munchkins!
I was thinking like The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Or, you know, that.
You know, yeah. Something like that, but no.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
Dorothy knows. No, it's The Shadow. I know it's The Shadow.
I know you know.
I know.
You like Alec Baldwin.
I love Alec Baldwin so much. It's a problem.
It is a problem. We should talk about that.
Yeah, okay. We could have an Alec Baldwin intervention. Yeah. Sure, no problem. Right. Actually, you want to know how much?
Say his name three times, he appears, you know.
What?
If you say his name three times, he'll appear.
Alec Baldwin.
Well, so
you
usually.
Bastard, you lied to me.
We're working on it.
Oh, anyway. I actually, a couple of weeks ago, I found some extra money in my pocket, which I have now spent, but it doesn't for on groceries. But before, I was like, maybe I want to get something fun for myself. So I tried to find the replica of the Shadow's ring from Alec Baldwin's The Shadow. Mm-hmm. And I found like one version of it, and it was like $400, and I was like,
that is not what I found in my pocket.
That is not as much money as I was thinking, like $10 like plus shipping, like, yeah. It was not cool. I almost reduced myself to buying a Green Lantern ring instead. I didn't do it. I was close though. I not reduced because I would have enjoyed that very much. Yeah. But there were so many, I didn't know which one to choose.
I just
gave up.
A few years ago, when they put the free Green Lantern, when they started putting out the free rings, like with the comics.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
During Blackest Night.
Yeah. Yes, I still have all of them in the drawer.
I do too. Yeah. But I almost bought like a nice like replica of Hal's ring, like a nice one, metal one. Did not do that. There were too many to choose from.
There's so many to choose from, and this just it's for thing just for you, like really.
So that's my favorite black and white movie.
Yeah.
So we came up with this topic. Tim came up with this topic, and I said it's great. Let's definitely do it. But we didn't tell each other what our favorite black and white movies are.
Do you want to say it at the same time? It's the same movie.
All right. Let's
do it. Okay. You ready?
After one, three, two. One.
Psycho.
Citizen Kane.
Damn. Oh, okay. I almost said Citizen Kane too.
Glad.
Psycho.
Great choice.
Yeah. Citizen Kane. Great choice. It's almost cliche.
Kind of.
Talk about that first.
Citizen Kane.
Talk about that first.
I mean, what hasn't been said about Citizen Kane? I mean, it is.
A lot, I'm sure.
Well, okay. Rosebud. It's often you've seen the movie.
Yes,
right?
I have.
Okay, yeah. So it is often at the top of
for those who haven't.
Okay, yeah. Very briefly, story of a tycoon, wealthy, a kid who inherits a ton of money, grows up to become one of the wealthiest men in the country, in the world, runs a newspaper, that becomes a bunch of newspapers, becomes radio networks, and he owns movie studios and owns just... He is a, you know, early 20th century Rupert Murdoch. He just owns a piece of everything. And he was it was actually based on the life story of William Randolph Hearst. And that's who the character was based on. Orson Welles in his, I think it was his movie directing
debut. Shadowy Glory.
Yes.
It's all tying together.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. There you go.
For those of you who don't know, Orson Welles was the voice of the Shadow on radio. The original radio program, The Shadow.
Yep. But he was, I think it was his movie directing debut, and it was kind of, it's kind of where he peaked. He was under 30, I believe, and that was kind of where he peaked in his career in a lot of ways, because William Randolph Hearst, like I said, Rupert Murdoch of his day, when something bad came out about him, even if it was loosely about him, he made sure it got shut down, and whoever was involved with it was punished. So Orson Welles was summarily punished. But anyway, it is considered one of the greatest films of all time. Still to this day, it tops many, many lists of greatest films. It's often number one, or at least in the top five.
Do you know why it's considered one of the top films? Apart from its story.
Aside from the story, it's Orson Welles did a lot of... Because he was not really... He came from theater. He came from... You know, and then he brought that to radio. And then he brought that to film. And because he was not sort of your conventional director of the day, which is the early 40s, so we're talking Michael Curtiz, we're talking... you know, the David O. Selznick era, Gone with the Wind, all that kind of stuff.
The fact that you could just pull those names out of nowhere is extraordinary.
Frank Capra. So you're talking
that. Say RCA. Say it.
On the RCA radio network.
Yeah.
So you're talking there's a type of filmmaking at the time, and he brought in all these radical ideas, and it came from just the things like, well, I really want this low camera angle. And I want you to be looking up at Charles Foster Kane, because he's such a titan. He's a huge figure. He's a bigger, larger than life figure. I want him to be big on the screen. I want you to feel little looking up at him. So what are we going to do? We're going to put the cameras down at the floor level and pointing up at him. But we can't get quite low enough from the floor level. So we're actually going to dig a hole in the floor and put the camera in the hole in the floor looking up at Orson Welles as Charles Foster Kane to give that idea of him as this grand figure.
So things like that. You're talking the birth of modern cinema.
Really is. Truthfully. That is really why it's considered one of the number one films. And yeah, it is kind of cliche, like you said. I mean, yeah, it's kind of cliche because everyone pretty much acknowledges. And in recent years, maybe it starts to fall further down the list, not number one anymore in some people's view. But still, it is basically the birth of modern cinema. It's taking this, I would say it's kind of the moment where movies stop being like, oh, well, first there was like vaudeville, and then there were like longer form shows, and then we invented movie cameras, so we just put a camera in front of the stage and filmed people doing the play or doing the vaudeville show or whatever. It went from that of just like, well, it's just we're filming what was already on stage, to let's use the medium. Like, let's use it the way it's meant to be made. And there were films before. Gone with the Wind was, you know, very, very cinematic. And even The Wizard of Oz that we mentioned before, you know, it but this is considered one of the first movies that really put together lots of different, you know, I don't know. I can't think of it right now. But it's techniques. Thank you. Different filmmaking techniques that are still used today.
Do you know what came first? Like, out of the three films that you just...
Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind were the same year, 39. Citizen Kane, I believe, was 42.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. I always had them reversed in my head. I actually, for some reason, placed Gone with the Wind, like, way forward in time. And I don't know if that's just color. Like... It was the Wizard of Oz, though.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, color existed, but it was so expensive that it didn't really catch on until the 50s.
True. But yeah, I don't know what it. It's I don't. Expensive. I just always put it further in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, that's so that's why it's on people's list. Why is it on your list?
It's on my list because a few years back, at this point, probably close to 10 years ago, I had a summer where my goal was, and I was like 15 or something. Mm-hmm. My goal was I'm going to watch as many movies from the AFI
top 100. Yeah, I've done that before, yeah.
As many
We've
as
done
I
that
can
together.
We actually
yeah,
have.
We
yeah,
have
right.
done that together.
That's right. We did, yeah.
The movie we shall not speak of.
That's where, nope. A watch play Apple. So, yeah, I decided I was just going to watch as many movies from that list as I could in no particular order. Just like movies I haven't seen that I feel like watching. I didn't watch a whole lot of movies when I was growing up, so I was kind of making up for that.
Okay.
Or not that I didn't watch a lot. There were a lot of movies, classics, that I hadn't seen, and I was making up for that.
Okay.
In my adolescence. And I got to Citizen Kane, had heard of it, didn't really realize the importance that he placed on it. So I watched it knowing that, like, oh, wow, it's number one on this list. Didn't realize, I mean, I'd heard of this movie, but I didn't realize it's, like, the number one movie of all time.
Right.
So I watched it, and what struck me, why it's my favorite black and white movie, today, anyway, that changes, I guess, sometimes, but is because it is... the story struck me like such a the film noir drama of this guy who he starts as a kid and his mother leaves him the money and he and the way it's all told in retrospect, he's already dead at he dies at the beginning of the movie, and we're piecing together his life and trying to figure out what the meaning of a man's life is. And I was just captivated by this story, and I think I realized
I've seen it and I'm captivated all over again
because it's phenomenal. I actually just rewatched it last week.
Oh,
and that's why it's like so fresh on my mind right now. Okay. That's probably why it came to mind.
Okay,
it's just rewatching it after probably about 5 years of not having seen it is just all this stuff comes rushing back, and it reminds me why I love movies. I think that's really what it is. Watching that movie reminds me, like, this is what I love about movies. Like,
I should rewatch.
You should absolutely rewatch
it. I haven't watched Citizen Kane since I was 13.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You'll have a field day watching it again.
Now, and it's, I enjoyed it when I watched it. Now, this is a very short story, but I got it for my graduation gift from 8th grade.
Oh, wow.
I got two movies. I think I actually got three. For some reason, I can't remember what the third one is. So, I got... As far as the story is concerned, I got two movies. I got Citizen Kane and Air Force One.
Oh!
I know. Could not be more different. More awesome all at the same time. In my hand, I hold true awesomeness. It's like... Just great lines. It's like, you know, Rosebud, get off my plate.
Yeah, really.
You
know? That's fantastic.
It was great. I still have them. I know exactly where they are. You know, some stuff that you get for gifts and whatever else come and go. But I still have both those films. But Citizen Kane, I think I actually watched first because I was very excited by the notion of receiving this as a gift. Mm. Just because, one, as a 13-year-old boy... It's definitely an outside-the-box gift.
Oh, yeah.
Like, truly, my parents did know me and still do know me very well. Mm-hmm. I had seen Air Force One first. So I was super excited to get that. But the notion of watching this, like, ultimate classic really did intrigue me. And I was an Orson Welles fan beforehand. Again, almost for no particular reason, not because as a 13-year-old I wasn't some Orson Welles connoisseur. I've seen all of Mr. Welles' films. You know? I've gone to see his grave. There's a picture of me in front of it. I have no idea where he's buried. It's just this, the mystique of the film is so enrapturing, I guess, even for me at 13. But I really should watch it again because I remember watching it. I remember liking it. But now after spending a couple of years of studying film and teaching it and like all these different things that I've done, probably would appreciate it a lot more, even just in 100%. Even in the realm of storytelling, just like I'm sure I would get a lot more out of it this time.
Totally.
Well, maybe I'll do that after we stop recording.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, actually, I probably won't, but I wasn't thinking about it. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow instead.
There you go.
Yeah. Other days. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely worth a rewatch all these years later. I actually really want to hear your perspective on it after you've rewatched it.
But I'll do it soon while I'm thinking about it.
Sure.
Actually, I don't have anything to...
There you
usually
go.
True. I like to watch... when I'm on vacation, which I am now, I like to watch a couple films a week just to... Stuff I haven't seen for a long time or new stuff because when I'm working, I don't have time.
Right.
Usually. Or I don't have time to pay attention the way that I should.
Right.
And so I love to like catch up on the stuff that like, oh, all these movies that won Oscars like 4 years ago.
Yeah,
let's watch those. And so She'd be like, all these movies that won Oscars 60 years ago. Yeah. I'll watch that. Like, yeah. How many? Yeah, 60? I don't know. I made that number up. Well, so yeah. Well, I didn't make up the number 60. I made up how many long ago it was. To clarify, I am not God.
Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome. Yeah. Citizen Kane. Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. That's good.
But Psycho.
Yeah. I know.
Okay.
Hitchcock.
So.
Hitchcock. I love Hitchcock. Oh. To start off the bat, I love the man that is Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Along with the films. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, he's just awesome.
Now, you're saying it's your favorite black and white film. Is it your favorite Hitchcock film?
Good question. That's a question for a different day.
Okay, fair.
I don't know if I can answer right now. Vertigo
would be my favorite.
North by Hitchcock. Northwest is really good.
That is also very good.
The Birds is spectacular.
Every film he made.
Every film. Yeah. No,
Most of them.
Anyway, the thing with... I struggled a little bit when I was trying to think of, like... okay, which one do I like more? What black and white film do I... I had a couple that ranged in my head. I love the Universal Monster movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're just so much classically campy fun.
Yes.
That... I just love
them. They invented the genre. They invented the formula.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They're just like, just watching like cameras pan in on Bela Lugosi staring at the camera for a solid minute. Yeah. And you're just like, he's a little uncomfortable after a little while. And so, okay. Stop staring at me, Bella. Stop it.
Yeah.
So I thought about those for a little while, but I think Psycho has had the most lasting impression on me. And I think that's why it's my favorite. It's certainly not one that I like. I can't wait to watch Psycho because every time I do, I don't want to take a shower. So it's not, or walk up the stairs. Have you seen it? Yeah. Okay. So, well, for those of you who haven't seen it, the story of Psycho is really about, I guess you could say it's about Norman Bates. But this is definitely spoilers to the movie. It's got a true Shyamalan twist or Chris Nolan twist or whoever does twists now. But anyway, so it starts with this woman, her name's Marion Crane, and she steals a bunch of money from the company that she's working for, basically, and runs away and ends up at this hotel. And it's called the Bates Motel, and she spends overnight there, and she's talking to the guy who runs it, whose name is Norman Bates, and he lives with his mom up in the big house, and it's creepy, and he likes taxidermy, and, like, all this weird stuff and whatever else. And the most famous scene of the movie is she's taking a shower, and the mother comes in shrouded in shadow, and hacks her to death with the knife, basically, and then he puts the body in the swamp and bubble. This is like this whole. So then her sister starts looking for her and blah blah blah, all this stuff. And so anyway, and so it turns out at the end of the film that twist that mom has been dead for years and that her skeleton is just dressed up in her clothing in a wig and like hanging out by windows and in the basement or whatever else, and he. Norman is dressing up like a woman and going around killing people as his mother because he's got a true dual personality. Mm-hmm. His killer manifests itself as his mother, which probably says a lot about his mother.
Mm.
But a tremendous film. But I watched it when I was, I was young. I don't know what possessed my parents to be like, this movie is acceptable for you to watch. I mean, I was probably like 10 or 11 or something like that, but I was young for something. That. And I mean, you're talking, I get scared. I live alone and I get scared of the house by myself at night to this day. And I don't do well with stuff like that. I don't know. I'm sure they had their reasons. It's a classic. Sometimes you don't think. And I'm glad I actually did get to watch it at the age. I do not regret watching it at this age. Even though for years, not even for years, to this day, you know, like easy 15, 20 years later, I walk into a bathroom. I don't care if it's my house or some rando's house. I open up that shower curtain to make sure that there's not a person there. Like, I could be in your house for 3 seconds and I've met you before in my life. Chances are I'm going to peek behind the shed. Yeah. There's no murderer there, because that, the greatest odd is that there will be one in the house. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Right. Which is actually an odd reaction, considering that the fear should be when I'm in the shower.
Yeah,
not, because that's how the scene happens. Right. I'm not really sure where the checking behind the shower
but it's, comes I think it's from. A universal thing. I've done that too. I'm not ashamed. I'm a little ashamed to admit.
Yeah, I was saying, change your mind. Yeah, I think everyone does it. Like, I think every, it's like people who, everyone who sees Jaws, you're a little bit afraid to go in the water. Jurassic Park, you're a little bit afraid to go to Costa Rica. You know, like, it's on, those are all
a little bit afraid to spare no expense.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's yeah, so that film has had a lasting impression on me as an adult. I love it because it is one of the first true horror movies taken seriously. Mm-hmm. Apart from the Universal Monsters, which is something different, but this is really one of the first like thriller psychosis. There's yeah. something wrong, there's a mystery and you do not know, and it's taken 100% earnestly. Everybody is on their A game all the time, and no matter how old I get, it is so creepy.
It's so true.
It's so creepy. That scene, there's a scene in which Marion and Norman, it's before she dies, and they're sitting in like the hotel office, and it all is like taxidermy animals around, just cat looming shadows everywhere. And he's like, "Well, the boy has to be good to his mother," or like whatever. Oh my god, it's so creepy. And I'm probably going to have nightmares tonight talking about it, because that's the kind of person I am. But
it's, I mean, it is, you're so right. It is really the one of the first, or at least one of the first I was exposed to of those movies, like Inception or something, where it's like, yeah, where like that style, that genre,
yeah.
but a little more horror than the thriller. Genre that is like, this could happen. Like, this is a thing that could happen.
Yeah, in the realm of like in your head,
yeah.
These things could happen. Like Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
Buffalo Bill could happen. Even right. Hannibal Lecter could happen. I mean, there have been instances on the news of cannibalism over the past couple of years, you know.
Right.
It happens.
Yes.
And so, but Psycho was really one of the first movies to be like, this is big. Yeah. It didn't do well in theaters when it first came out.
Is that so? I didn't know.
It didn't do extraordinarily well the same way that other Hitchcock films had, because he was coming off of North by Northwest, which was massively huge for him.
Yeah,
and the studios were like, make another one like that. And of course, he was like, no, I will not. I will do something different. And so he read this book and turned it into the movie, which if you have a chance to read the book, do it, because it's just as creepy as the movie, but adds a couple of layers in, because it's like, it's at the same point where like, he doesn't know he's also his mother.
Right. Right.
Which is a weird sentence out of context.
Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's true. And that's what makes it so brilliant and so creepy.
It's so, yeah, it's so great. You know, and I like, it doesn't really have to do with the film necessarily, but I like legacy actor families.
Yeah.
Janet Leigh, who played Marion, who got killed in the shower. Or Jamie Lee Curtis is her daughter, who famously ran away from Michael Myers for 20 years.
Right.
Yeah. And so, among many, many other films that she is should probably be known for.
True. But the horror level.
But that horror level, that was her first big movie. Yep. And so, yeah. So I think that's why it's my favorite. If I had to like really dig deep down, I might come up with another one. Because Psycho, I mean, if you look at Citizen Kane and Psycho, they're almost separated by 20 years of filmmaking. And colored films were definitely in vogue by the time that Psycho came out.
Yes. I think it was a stylistic choice.
It worked. For sure. But that definitely hits home for me.
That is definitely, I mean, it's a very influential movie. I think that's also in the AFI Top 100. I think it's
It is. Actually, I have one of those books, 1001 Movies You Have to See Before You Die.
Yep.
Which is where we watched Watch Play Apple.
Right.
That's how we watched that movie.
That's right.
Watch Play Apple. Code Breakers. Feel free to. actually, the cover is Marion getting murdered in the shower.
Nice.
And so maybe that's why I bought the book to begin
with. Maybe that's why.
No, I don't know.
Yeah. And now Bates Motel is a TV show.
Which I don't watch.
I don't either, but
yeah,
you're making me want to.
It's on Netflix, actually.
Is it really now?
My parents watch it, actually. They liked it. And so, and they have good taste in television. Yeah, so it's a Breaking Bad at the top, and everything trickles down from there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you're a Breaking Bad fan, then you have your taste is like my parents.
Right.
Or like all of America. Like, whatever.
Or all the people.
Yeah, all the people. All of them. And so...
Yeah. But any honorable mentions?
Oh, well, I'm going to give my honor. I give my honorable mentions to the monster movies.
Okay, that's right. Yep.
Because
yep.
they came close to hitting
yep.
it for me.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll give mine to them. How about you?
I do have an honorable mention. This is one that I don't know if you've seen.
Teenagers from Outer Space.
Nope.
Okay, never mind. That movie's great and awful. I've
never seen that.
Awful. Awful. It's a Mystery Science Theater. It's one of those Mystery Science Theater movies.
Yeah.
And before you say yours, the teenagers are like 30 years old in the film,
yeah.
Which is great. But there's a scene where like one of them, the alien who looks like a 30-year-old man, is supposed to be a 15-year-old kid, is like driving around a mountain really fast with like a 60-year-old nurse in the backseat or something like that. And one of the lines from Mr. Science Theater is like, menopause can sometimes feel like a speeding car chase. And I was like, I'll never remember any other joke from that movie. I just remember that. And I don't know why that one sticks in my head particularly. I don't know. But it is a great episode.
That is great.
Yeah. But okay. So what was your honorable mention?
My honorable mention is a movie that has at times been my favorite movie ever. At times in my life. And it is Yankee Doodle Dandy.
I've never seen it.
Okay.
That's
yeah. It is
interesting.
It's a musical.
I didn't know that about you.
Okay.
And the movie.
And the movie.
But, yeah,
and
not about you. You are a musical.
So, okay, but you're yeah. Yeah, my whole life.
Musical. Yeah.
Little singing birds follow me everywhere. Yeah. At Disney. But so are you like familiar with it at all?
Is baseball?
No, it's not.
Okay, what so am I thinking of?
Maybe take me out to the ball game. I'm not sure. Okay, Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard of it who are listening. It's the life story of George M. Cohan. He was in the beginning of the late 19th, early 20th century. He was a Broadway star. He wrote, directed, and produced and starred in dozens and dozens of Broadway shows.
Okay.
But he's best known for writing songs like Yankee Doodle Dandy, like Grand Old Flag, Over There, another wartime song he wrote during World War I.
Mm.
So he wrote a lot of like just patriotic songs that are really well known nowadays,
mm.
even to this day. But so it's his life story. It came out at the beginning of World War II, and it takes place like it's him talking to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and telling his life story.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's James Cagney of you know gangster movie fame,
yeah.
but. As a Broadway guy and doing song and dance and everything, and you see little snippets of all the different like the biggest shows that he's most famous for, and him singing Yankee Doodle, you know, Grand Ole Flag, and all these songs. So it's this guy who is known for being like a gangster and a tough guy, tap dancing and singing.
Okay.
And it's very cheesy. People make fun of it. You know, nowadays, mm-hmm. but it is actually still, it's in that AFI top 100 still.
Okay.
It's like number 97 or something, but it's in there. And it's considered a classic because of, the technique, the filmmaking, and just sort of the frames of, there's so many frames of reference in this movie. It's like the whole thing is a big flashback of his entire life. And then within that flashback, there's smaller flashbacks to, you know, oh, to when I was in this show and that show, and the way it's shot, you really you feel like you're in the audience watching these. Whenever they're on stage, whenever you're watching something that's supposed to be happening on stage, you feel like you're in the audience of a vaudeville theater. Or
that's
or
cool. Theater. That is cool.
I would
actually
enjoy
that.
It's nice. It's not like a serious. It's very much just like a feel good. Kind of, they took a lot of liberties with his life story and everything to make
musical.
Him right.
Yeah, because you know the Von Trapps definitely happen the
exactly.
same way.
Exactly.
Music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like things where sometimes the songs are being performed like in a show that he's performing, and sometimes it's like weaved into his life.
It's like White Christmas.
Kind of like White
that.
Christmas.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar to that. So, but it's a fun movie. Beautifully shot. Looks great on Blu-ray if you can get a copy of it. All these movies look great on Blu-ray. If you can
see them. You know, I will say that about, because to go back to my honorable mentions, which I did think of an honorable mention, which I can't believe I didn't think of, Casablanca, freaking amazing film.
Of course,
but another day. I have the Universal Monster Movie Collection on Blu-ray. Yes. They're gorgeous, looking they films. Look great. Even if you like sit there and you're like, all right, you're really stiff with this, or like this line is corny or whatever else, just to watch them. Like, the sets are unbelievable. Oh, yeah. You just don't... I could say you don't get stuff like that anymore, but that's not necessarily true. You do get stuff like that now, but it just... There's something about watching it happen then that makes it feel, even though it's probably faker, feel more real. It's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic.
It is.
Yeah, the way that nostalgia you're not even there for works. Like, That's how it happened.
Yeah.
Even though I know it's not, but that's how it went.
Yeah. No, it's true.
It's crazy.
You mentioned Casablanca. Mm-hmm. Same director as Casablanca, director Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Oh, now I definitely want to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he's got two movies on the top AFI.
That's right. Hitchcock's probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got a bunch. Yeah. But still.
He might have the most. I don't know.
We should check.
We should look. Yeah.
We should check. Fun fact about a director of a film that we talked about before we close. The Wizard of Oz director was a Nazi sympathizer.
Yes, I did know that.
Yep. And that's all for now. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. And tune in next time. And cheers.
Cheers.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. All character names, sound effects, and quotes are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Thought Bubble Audio Studios, unless otherwise indicated.